Hello, dear listeners of Amem Radio. Welcome to our cultural show. How is a wedding planned in Cameroon, in Spain, in Kenya? Today, we want to share with you another special specificity of our different traditions. For that to happen, in the studio, we are myself, Regine Dansaila, with Natalia Pagron. Hi, Natalia.
Hello, Regine.
And Eric Muller. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Regine.
So, we'll be talking about wedding celebrations. A wedding can be a bond, a love affair, an agreement. It can be the most beautiful day of one's life. But in many cultures, it can also, unfortunately, be the saddest day. Here, I'm thinking of child brides, forced marriages, and other forms of bond coercion. But today, we'll see the beauty and we'll share with you wedding traditions that tie two lovers forever. And so, once the two lovebirds have finally decided to involve their families in the private love matter for the broom jumping ceremony, what happens? That is what we'll share with you in a while by visiting Kenya first. So, Eric, Kenya is mostly known abroad about the superb safaris that can be done in the country, at Masai Mara Park, for example, just to name one. But today we want to have an insight about the way weddings are celebrated in your land. What can you tell us about weddings in Kenya?
Thank you, Regine. Kenya is home to a lot of beauty, you know, including the Masai Mara that you mentioned, which is one of the seven wonders of the world, you know, the wildebeest migration across the Mara River. And so it's quite a spectacle for the tourists, if you will. But on to weddings. We equally have a lot of diversity. Kenya has many different wedding traditions, and they vary between tribes. And traditional weddings are often followed by a religious one or a civil one at the Attorney General's office. Kenya has 42 tribes, and each tribe has its own traditions, marriage customs, and rituals. And this is an important factor to consider, especially if intertribal marriages are happening. In most cases, if there is a clash of traditions between tribes, then the tradition of the lady's tribe prevail. And this is out of the purview that it is the man that seeks the lady's hand in marriage. And so the function follows what needs to be done to secure the lady's hand in marriage. In other cases, you have different traditional ceremonies on both sides, each ascribing to the traditions of the tribe in which they occur. Oftentimes, generally, there will be 2 to 3 meetings between families before the traditional wedding, no matter which tribe they are from. So the first one is whereby the bride's parents are visited by the groom and his father and uncles to show interest in marriage with their daughter. The second one, generally, is whereby there are dowry negotiations. And finally, when the dowry is paid, then the wedding plans are finalized. So this is the general structure across tribes. Also, the groom is not allowed to speak in any of these meetings and negotiations, with most of the talking being done by the father and uncles, except, of course, for the one confirmation from his end that he truly has decided to seek the lady's hand in marriage and that it is their personal decision. In the older days, the elders, or as we call them in Swahili, wazee, would decide for you. You had no choice in the matter. It was a case of arranged marriages as the elders deem fit. But now, of course, they're asking the lady and the gentleman if this is who they have fallen in love with and who they want to marry, which is only fair and right. So the bride-to-be also is commonly not present in all these activities until the meetings are complete. She remains hidden until she is summoned by the elders to confirm that the groom is the one. These ceremonies always entail a lot of feasting. There will be piles of ugali, you know, this is the rich meal made out of corn flour, chicken, fish, beef, goat meat, fried, stewed, roasted, served in different ways, rice, chapati, traditional vegetables, tea with mandazi. Mandazi is like buns. And other traditional favorites as per the tribe in question. Due to the huge cost of these feasts, most parents nowadays are preferring to fuse all these different visits into one single ceremony, because traditionally they would occur separately. Of course, there are variations among tribes with these meetings. However, most include this in one form or the other. So let me speak specifically to wedding within the Kamba tribe from which I am from, right? From which I hail. So Kambas traditionally have numerous wedding meetings, with the initial one resembling more of a covert operation. It is called Kwasia, which loosely translates to announce. The man's parent, and maybe an uncle, will visit his love interest's parents to express his interest. If the lady's parents like their prospective son-in-law, he gets the green light. Otherwise, his family must slither away quietly, like it never happened. The second meeting, of course, everything having gone well, is attended by the groom, his parents and uncles, and is usually about seeking the blessing of the parents and elders for the intended union. It is the official flagging off of the intended union by the elders from both sides. This is the second meeting. If all goes well, a third meeting is set. It is called Ndeo. Here, the groom must now provide two female goats and one male goat, which are slaughtered immediately to bless the union. The male goat is slaughtered by none other than the groom himself. And this is symbolic of the groom's position to be able to take charge of the events in their marriage and make things happen, taking responsibility. It is also at this Ndeo event that the groom must rally his family to the bride's home to cook for her whole family. And this is usually a sign that they can take care of his wife when she arrives home. So literally, the groom's family go to the bride-to-be's family and they cook for them over there. The rest just relax, sit back, and wait for the good stuff to come. But yes, of course, nowadays, a caterer is hired to make the logistics a bit more easier, I guess, with modernization. So during this Ndeo sitting, the end of which signifies that the groom and bride are now officially traditionally married, the bride price or dowry is negotiated. A portion of this dowry is paid immediately, while the rest is paid in bits over a long period of time. The presumption for the payment over a long time is that the union and friendship is not a one-time event. It will also grow and blossom with the passage of time between the two families. So it is a friendship between both sides that will go on forever, from the two that initially get united and the kids that come thereafter. So it's a long-standing friendship. And so the dowry is paid over a long period of time, of course, after the initial settlement. And let me speak something about dowry or bride price. It is nowadays often misconstrued as buying the girl off as property. This is not the case, and is not why dowry or bride price was put in place traditionally. We see cases where some men have abused women in the name of, I paid bride price or dowry for you, I therefore own you. Bride price or dowry, as originally intended, was one, to show appreciation to the lady's parent for having raised a lady worth of marriage. For even the good book says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. And so it was in appreciation of the parents, you know, for all their effort and hard work and, you know, bringing up this wonderful lady in society. The second reason was it was a measure of gifting the parties who have received visitors. A lot of African tradition, if you go visiting, you don't go empty-handed. You don't go with empty hands. You carry something, whatever that is. It may be as simple as a bunch of bananas, but you don't go empty-handed. And so bride price was a measure of gifting their parties who have received visitors, you know, a sign of their coming in good faith. And it was a measure to start off the budding relationship between families on the right note. The third reason was that it was so that the man could show responsibility and provision. The same responsibility and provision that will be expected of them when they go into a family with the lady. And so bride price or dowry was all these nice things before the negative associations came in. And so personally, I'm not for doing away with the tradition. I'm for rewriting its meaning, because the negative associations have come in and are making it look like this thing needs to be done away with.
Absolutely.
And so the fourth and final ceremony after that is the mada. We call it the mada. And this is a ceremony whereby the larger community from the lady's side come together to give their girl a befitting send-off to her new home, to gift her with money, household possessions, traditional attire, cooking pots, cutlery, kitchenware, whatever that is, so that she is enabled to set up a happy home. The lady is set off to her new home because from that time henceforth, she ceases to be called by her father's name and is now referenced by her husband's name. The lady adopts the husband's name and may even legally change her name on all official documents. There are official channels for that as well. So having done the traditional wedding, which is between the families, people then move on to do a formal church or mosque wedding, which is the religious wedding, or a civil wedding at the Attorney General's office, which are the two wedding avenues that are recognized by the Kenyan Constitution as being lawful and legal for all official purposes. So the traditional wedding is cultural, per tribe, and then you have the formal church or mosque wedding, which is the legal wedding that grants you a marriage certificate, if you will. And so after all these ceremonies, then the bride and groom are of course free to live happily ever after and have plenty of babies.
Yes, that's like all love stories are meant to finish, I suppose. Absolutely.
So that's a Kenyan Kamba wedding.
Fantastic recount indeed. And I very much like the bit, because I read your text before, the bit about the historical aspect of the dowry, you know, because you said that it was to show appreciation to the lady's parents for having raised a lady worthy of marriage.
Yes.
And but nowadays it is pretty much abused, and because you also said it is misconstrued as buying the girl off as property, which leads to many men abusing their wives. But you also say that you stand by that tradition. How is not the contradiction?
I stand by it because its original intention was well-meaning. What it has become in the present context is what has destroyed it.
That is it, but it's still present in this context. Has things changed? Actually, things are even getting worse because it's actually about buying wives now, for what I saw.
I think it's more a question of do we throw out the baby with the bathwater, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the tradition is okay. It's the interpretation that's wrong.
Yeah.
And so, personally, it was an honor to pay dowry for my wife.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't mention that there was a whole parade of similar ladies all covered up in the lessos or kangas. What do you call them? It's like the lesso and the kanga. It's traditional covering. So they're covered from head to toe and you can't see anything and you have to choose
the
right
yours.
One. and so of course before the ceremony, you know, you have a little insider information, you know. Maybe your wife agrees that when you pass in front of them, they're going to twitch their toe a bit, and you get to have some inside information. Otherwise it's pretty difficult to tell, because everything is the same, you know. Of course, if you pick the wrong one, then you pay a fine.
Exactly, that's
absolutely
exactly.
You pay a fine. So
I was about to ask you what happens if you don't pick the correct one.
You pay a fine, of course, to the girl's family. Of course, so that means more goats for the family.
Okay.
Absolutely. So
very interesting indeed.
Yes, you have this whole parade, and you don't know where to start. Everyone is the same height, same body build, everything. You can't tell them apart.
I relate so much on that, but we will, yes, when we'll go to Cameroon, maybe it is, I will mention it a little bit later on to speaking about the wedding in Cameroon. So from Kenya now in Africa, let's go to Europe and let's go in Spain, where I feel that we will hear a totally different recount. And because what we know Spain, Natalia, it is a lot about flamenco, bright colors.
Well, it's a lot about dancing and joy. Dancing not and joy. And the flamenco is mainly for the southern region.
But
it can have a dance element, of course. As we will see.
Yes, sure. Because when I say flamenco, if you think of Spain and you think of dance, someone who's never been to Spain will tell you about flamenco. But also football, great football, fantastic architecture. That's also something that is very much related with Spain. But people know very little about some specific traditions and, for example, weddings. So my question to you is, what can you tell us about weddings in Spain?
Yes, so yes, I will tell some of the most notable things I know about weddings, and I hope we can find some common elements with Kenya and, who knows, Cameroon. I think we may find some common grounds. Weddings in Spain are full of tradition and superstitions. Over the years, some of these traditions are still alive, others are renewed, and others fade with time. Anyway, weddings are one of the most important celebrations because it's a day to celebrate love. Traditional Spanish bodas, as we call wedding, were usually celebrated according to the Catholic tradition. As you surely know, Spain is a Catholic country, traditionally at least. Yeah. But today, more and more people are opting for a civil ceremony and having a convite, a party, or a reception with family and friends afterwards. Mm-hmm. When it goes to the Catholic tradition, a couple of months before the wedding, an engagement party will take place at the bride-to-be parents' house. The purpose is to meet each other's family, and back in the old times, it was the day on which the groom would ask the bride's father permission to marry the bride. Yeah. The future couple give presents to each other. The groom will traditionally give a ring to the bride, and the bride can present a present, which is very often a wristwatch. And then a couple of months after, the wedding day arrives. If the couple marries following the Catholic tradition, they will meet at the church, where all the invitees and their families will be waiting for them, and they will attend the ceremony together. It can be a mass or it can be a blessing. This religious ceremony has a civil effect, so if you get married at church, you will be civilly married. If the couple opt for a civil wedding, they will meet at the town hall and the mayor or a notary will marry them. In both cases, witnesses have an essential role in the marriage ceremony. Their presence is mandatory because their role is to testify that the bride and the groom mutually agree to getting married and that no one is forced into it. During the ceremony, they will give each other a wedding ring to be worn in the ring finger. This ring symbolizes the union between the bride and the groom. And do you know why do we have to wear it in the ring finger?
No.
Because it's the only finger that has a direct vein to the heart.
Is that so?
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I learned preparing this program.
Which is great indeed.
Yeah. There's another traditional custom in Catholic Spanish weddings is for the bride and groom to share 13 coins, usually golden coins, and it's something that you inherit from your family. Mm-hmm. These coins are known as arras, and they represent the commitment of the bride and groom to share the goods they have and the goods they will share in their future together. So it's impressive how you introduce a very material element in a religious ceremony. Yeah. One of the most deeply rooted traditions is that the bride's dress should be white. This is used to represent her virginity. The groom has to dress in a suit, And also the invitees are also requested to wear formal attire. After the ceremony, all the invitees, friends and family, will gather to have lunch or dinner. Nowadays, depending on the decision of the couple, because it used to be the family who decided, they will either invite a big number of relatives and friends, sometimes not less than 200 people, or they may prefer to celebrate with a small number of people. Back in the days, it was customary for the bride's father to bear the expenses in payment of the dowry. That's, I think, there's something we have in common. Now expenses are split between the two families or paid by the couples if they are financially independent. During the convite or the wedding feast, the couple goes around the tables where the invitees are having dinner to say hello to everyone, and they offer the guests a small present to remember the day by. Traditionally, the wedding ceremony begins in the afternoon and lasts all night. No matter what time they start, Spanish weddings always end very, very late. After dinner, everyone will mingle and dance. We Spaniards love dancing and celebrating life and love. One of the traditions I like more is the luna de miel or honeymoon. Is this after all the nervousness and excitement leading up to the fiesta, the couple will go for a short holiday called luna de miel, the traditional honeymoon. So it's time to relax and take some couple time.
Amazing indeed.
Wonderful.
Really, wow. Isn't it? Yeah. And this interesting bit about the difference between older times and modern weddings, how things have changed. Because you said at some point that back in the old times, the groom will ask the bride's father for his permission to marry the bride. That's something that we don't see anymore in these days. I mean, there's no more the bride asking permission. Today, families are simply informed of the decision. And you also said that the bride and groom share 13 coins, known as aras, which represent their commitment to share the goals they have and will have in their future together. And then you commented that the way they add financial element to the fete, I understood it as with couples who divorce so easily today, maybe that connection of those 3 coins can be a kind of a bonding element rather than something that separate them. I see it like a bonding element, right? Those 13 coins.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a very realistic element to bring into something that can be understood as more spiritual or all about love. I think it brings into the picture something that is
the
very
reality.
Real. It's the goods that you will share. It's something that will happen in a couple. And also regarding, the permission, the father's permission, I think this is not existing anymore, but we still keep the tradition of going to meet each other's family and present ourselves in front of the family as a future couple.
Okay, just out of respect, because actually we come from families. Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great.
It was interesting to know the reason why the ring goes on the ring finger, you know.
Exactly.
That's a real nugget of information.
It is. It was new for me too. And actually, depending on the place of Spain where you come from, you wear it on the right hand or on the left hand. If you come from the center, from Madrid, you wear your ring in your right hand. Whilst if you come from Catalonia, you wear it on the left hand, as in France.
Is it any reason why left or right? Not just a decision from probably
tradition
a historic
again.
Exactly, a historic tradition. Yes, traditions are amazing indeed. You know, that is something that we should study deeper, and we should do definitely more programs about traditions. Thank you, Natalia. So from Spain, we go back to Africa, and we'll visit Cameroon, a country known as African miniature due to the rich variety of its landscape. And in Cameroon, we have around 250 tribes that display almost 250 specific traditions. So we cannot speak about a typical Cameroonian wedding as such, because it doesn't exist. Ceremonies are different from north to south and from east to west. But at least one thing is common. It is the saying that a man never finishes paying the bride price. I'm sorry about Eric, but really very much nowadays, many people think that's actually a bride price. but let's not go into that polemic. So, because the dowry is still practiced in many regions of Cameroon and the man is the one who pays. So how does it work? I will take the example of the Betis, the Betis crabs from where I hail. So a man who expresses the wish to marry a Betis girl must first of all do what is called knocking at the door. In my language, it's called akurumbe, knocking at the door. So the man, accompanied by an elder member of his family, pays a visit to the girl's parents. For the occasion, he brings a small gift that can be anything from a kola nut, a bottle of wine, or a bottle of whiskey. The two heads of families get to know each other for the occasion and highlight the qualities of the respective children. And at some point, the girl is asked by her father or who represents her father if she wants to get married. And upon her positive reply, the meeting will come to an end until the next one, during which the bride's father will gather all the family to announce the intention of their daughter to get married. So note that I have said now here their daughter, because at once the girl becomes really everyone's daughter. That is the tradition. She doesn't anymore belong to her father. This part of the process is the most important because it gives a sense of what is a marriage for the Betis. It is not between two persons, rather between two families, and even more accurate, between two villages. So as soon as the father breaks the news to the large family, he is out of the picture at it. And the matters are taken over by the head of the clan, who will start consultations for the dowry, which with each close family of the clan. And here, a list of items needed as a bride price, as a dowry, will be handed to the father's girl, tasked to pass it to the man. Items on the list are usually goats, pork, dozens of kilos of fish, many sacks of rice, numerous bottles of wine, a lot of crates of beer, a lot of furniture and house items, sweets, clothes, materials, money, even a car can be asked. So the more the family value their daughter, the longer the list. It's not wise for the father to reject a list, even if he found it exaggerated. He will rather negotiate privately with the heads of the clan in order to reduce it, especially if the couple is still young and just starting in life. The father will make all efforts to not alienate the heads of the clan to avoid being accused of siding with the man's family in a bid to eat alone, because such an accusation can lead to ostracism. Then the dowry list is passed to the family's man by the girl's family. It is good practice not to argue whatever expensive the list can be. Rather, the man will gather what he can afford from the list and bring it at a set date. This part is another important moment of the ritual. In fact, for every item missing in the list, the girl's family will ask for a fine. The groom will have prepared beforehand banknotes into envelopes that he will hand over as soon as he is given a fine for a missing item. The ceremony, which is actually a traditional wedding, can last from 10 a.m. in the morning to 7 p.m. based on how many items are missing in the list, as well as the ability of the man's family to defend their goodwill and financial capacity. Once the girl's family is eventually satisfied, the girl who was out of sight all the time, just like in Kenya, is called out with another group of women, all dressed in the same way, all the same shape, the same head, fully covered, so the man cannot recognize her. So the last test for the man will be to recognize and pick his wife among the group. Of course, he will be fine every time he picks the wrong woman. Voila, the two lovebirds are now officially married according to the tradition, and the civil wedding can take place anytime after the delivery of the dowry. So that was what is done in the Betis tribe in Cameroon. In other parts of Cameroon, the dowry is always present anyway. But the fathers sometimes have their say. They can say, no, this is my daughter. I was the one paying her studies. No one was there when I was doing so. where are you coming from now to for her to be your daughter? But those who do that, actually those who are well off, they, you know, maybe they don't live in the villages, they don't rely on anyone else for the education of their children, because let's not forget that in Africa children are raised by families.
I mean, it takes a village to raise a child.
It takes a village,
literally. So when you say that the girl ceases to become the father's daughter, and yeah, it's the village's daughter, you know, it takes a whole village to raise that child.
Absolutely.
Literally.
That's what's happened. Yes, and I suppose that in many parts of Africa, that's actually the way it is done.
It looks more a collective decision than a personal decision.
It is indeed what it is. It's a collective decision. And the father cannot say no, even the daughter, because you think of your family. Parents who live in village, they look at their daughter, they know the story, you know, this is my village, and live with these people all the time. So you really have to abide by all the rules. And they actually enjoy it, because this is their tradition, to be honest, you know, because when another daughter is getting married, that's what happens. So that's the way it is. The downside, the negative part, in my opinion, is that sometimes the dowry is too high. And it loses the value that you mentioned earlier.
No, I mean, for me, it's interesting, you know, listening to the different perspectives, you begin to see that it was more cultural differences than anything else, you know.
Yes.
It wasn't that one practice was bad or good over the other. It was more cultural differences.
Yeah.
How people choose to approach a certain item, you know, like Natalia, you say the decision is collective, right?
Yeah.
So that it's collective was a cultural expression for that people. You know, maybe in Spain it was always primarily the decision of the bride and groom, you know, it was individual.
Yeah.
While in the other case it's collective, you know. But so oftentimes you realize maybe how people frame things ends up depicting the other culture as negative.
Exactly.
Yet it's just a cultural difference.
Yes, exactly.
You know, at the heart of it.
That's true.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said of going back to the real meaning of tradition and not stopping at the image. We have to go back to the primary meaning.
Yeah. Which is the hard work, the hard part.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, if you look at it traditionally, originally, it was all well-meaning. You know, nothing was malicious, you know. But definitions and interpretations change over time.
So,
very interesting.
It was indeed. Unfortunately, we have to conclude the program very soon. It was so amazing. This is something that we have to do over and over. Actually, the decision is to start doing it on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, if possible. And you listener, we really hope that you have enjoyed what we just shared with you. And such a rich content cannot be lost. And after turning it into a podcast, it will also be published at articles in our web magazine that you can find at African Media, www.africanmediamalta.com. Also, remember to follow us on our social media. And feel free to send us interesting aspects of your culture, your traditions, that we will be happy to diffuse here. And in the meantime, stay safe and bye for now.